Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley. Medford playwright and actor Obehi Janis has the unique ability to capture the precise tone of a setting. Her latest play is called Old White Sugar Daddy, and it's about a Boston startup in the middle of the venture capital scene. The main character develops an anti-gentrification app called Neighbor that drops the last vowel. And Janis taps into the difficult process of courting investors as a Black woman. Her play is part of the Boston Project, a new work initiative by the Speakeasy Stage Company. Obehi Janis joins us now in studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So you're a writer, an actress, a comedian, and you're originally from Lowell.
I am.
What prompted you to write about the Boston startup scene?
Well, it's a really interesting journey. I was talking to some Black actresses, and we were actually joking about this tension between being Black, not having money, and like needing support. And we jokingly just talked about, you know, we need sugar daddies in a very joking way. And I remember saying, I'm going to write a play for all of you. And I run home and I put in like Old White Sugar Daddy in my Google search. And, you know, a couple of interesting sites came up very much in the realm of sort of the escort scene. So I kind of put that idea in my Google Drive, what I call my works in progress folder. And a couple of years later, just started meeting so much more people in the startup industry of all colors and creeds and whatnot, but would really notice that when I talked to Black women who were either launching their startups or really in that kind of, you know, frustrating stage of just getting funding, you know, they were really frustrated. Mm. And I would ask them to tell me more about that. And I noticed that the way that I, as a Black female artist, talk about oppression is a little different than what they talk about. So that was why I decided to pursue it.
Well, you bring up something really interesting because African-American women make up about 0.2% of all VC funding. Mm-hmm. But looking at the 2011 census, they're also the most educated mm-hmm. and entrepreneurial group in the U.S. And the main character in this piece, Lynn, puts a face on this statistic. I know that you haven't shown it. You're going to be showing it tonight. But,
yeah, in progress.
And, yeah. When you brought this up to folks who were you were showing it during the ideation stages,
yes.
What were the reactions?
They pretty much said, Obehi, you are so accurate.
Mm.
So even with the little knowledge that I had, and this was actually pre-research, this was pre-me realizing that that statistic, those numbers are true.
Was actually a thing.
Right, it was actually a thing. I was just kind of writing from my head of just, you know, knowing my experience of creating and not always knowing where does the money come from. And then when I wrote it and then I would share drafts and just ask questions, they literally said, like, this is it. That I go to a meeting with the VC or I pray for a good angel investor that is not just just has like this opinion of me based on my color or based on how my name sounds or based on my hair, you know? So it all becomes, not to use a pun, but really coded in race and in gender simultaneously.
The main character, Lynn, is a Nigerian-American programmer who develops an app, an algorithm to tackle gentrification. Talk a little bit about this idea. It was funny. We talked about it in the morning meeting and everyone chuckled at the same time at this idea.
Just like I'm chuckling right now.
Right.
Dear God, I mean, so I went to school at Georgetown University, and I say that because being in D.C. from about 2005, 2009, I saw it. I saw it happening in real time, this structural racism, the actual pushing out of Black people from the center of D.C. to the outskirts. So when I moved back home to Lowell, and then I immediately also moved to Dorchester pretty quickly after that, I just kind of saw it. I would hang out with people in Roxbury, and they would talk about it. They're kind of like, you know, that's new. Or you'd be in Central Square, and all my friends who are Black and from Area 4 would be like, why is that bar there?
Mm.
And it's those tiny things. But now, 2017, it is full force, so much so that I actually think that the word gentrification is becoming mainstream because it's actually happening. It is now so much a part of the Boston-Cambridge-Somerville culture that it is so commonplace. Like, you can talk about it over coffee, like, any day of the week.
You have this line. There's a scene where Lynn describes the app and the algorithm, and she says, quote, "Our city on a hill is a lie. We are not excellent. We are flawed. From the Mayflower to busing, our progressive city is actually quite conservative and very backward." So, okay, the public hasn't seen this play yet, but you know, people in Boston, they have reactions to themes that are directly hitting at the core of maybe some of the problems. We saw that with the Red Sox incident that happened.
Totally. And with Michael Che.
Absolutely. Yeah. With Comedian mm-hmm. when he said that Boston is a racist city. Mm-hmm. I would love to know just a little bit about why you felt it was so important to go right to the core of the problems that you see here in this city.
Of course. I think it is a POV problem. I've met Mayor Walsh in person. I think he's actually amazing. Great guy. But the reality is that his perspective as an Irish American, whatever generation he's from, is going to be immediately different from my perspective as a first-generation Nigerian-American woman who has Black friends, Caribbean friends. I have white friends. I have Italian-American friends. Like, on the ground, I am not only experiencing just the reality of what happens, but I'm also experiencing, like, the hurt. And the busing and this sort of puritanical thing, what essentially I'm trying to tease out is the fact that Boston is this interesting city of, like, culture and capital, but it's always, like busting up against each other. Mm. And you feel, as a woman of color, that it simmers. And I think that's the simmering that is frustrating, is that it's always the racism and the oppression. It's usually subtle, connected to what you said, what you're all talking about top of the show. I mean, those young women with the braids, mm. I mean, I spent a day just sad. Like, my body physically
Your
was hurting.
Was...
My personhood was affected mm-hmm. because those young women were attacked for their hair, for their actual Black female body. So that's what I experienced.
Yeah, and you're talking specifically about the girls who go to the charter school.
Yes, exactly.
And who wore the braids to school, and they were suspended because of the braids. Mm-hmm. It was against the dress code. Talking about that simmer, you have a scene in the play where three white men are creating an app called Bodega, and you explore the cultural appropriation of that.
Yeah.
So while they were three white men and they're not Hispanic or anything in any way, they have this app called Bodega, and they say that it's an ode to you know, to folks.
Yes.
Why was it that an important theme for you to explore? It's really touching on what you said earlier.
I'm so glad, because honestly, as a self-proclaimed millennial, it is an issue. I mean, right now in Portland, Oregon, these two young white women just got shut down for their burrito.
That's
business.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's
so, like,
right. Yeah.
This is happening. I think that millennial hipster culture, which again can be coded as white, which is again a racial thing, you see it happening, that somebody's kind of like, I love my local bodega, but why do you love your local bodega? Like, don't just say that you're down. Don't try to perform a downness, but really listen to people of color and what they're saying. Or honestly, just stop doing this kind of, like, fake kind of appreciation. And I think that,
and let them do that,
and
thing.
Let them do it, you know what I'm saying? Or don't, or yeah, I just think that there is this kind of put-onness about it. So the Bodega app is that thing, and it does take a while for certain people, like the characters that you mentioned, to realize that it is not honoring a culture. It is actually completely stealing, and it's denigrating it.
So very quickly, with the time we have left, let's talk a little bit about you. So part of your work, we watched a TED Talk you did in 2015, TEDx Talk at Fenway.
Yeah.
And you said that when you write a play, you really try to get at the heart work. And we see a lot of these themes actually in this play, because so much of it is kind of a bit of you, your experiences, the women that you meet.
Yeah.
Why is it important to get to that heart work? You could write about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And not just your experience.
Of course. I do believe in transformation in the theater. I believe in empathy and relatability and, you know, the possibility of universality. But really, I think that my specificity of the heart work allows an audience member to feel something beyond themselves. So that's why I do that.
You're also funny. So we talked about the comedian.
You.
So you have this music video called Black Girl Yoga.
I
think we have a little bit of time to play the cut.
Okay.
I'm the only black girl in my yoga class. It's like an SNL skit, really.
Yeah,
it is.
I'm glad.
We talk a lot about these themes, about you wearing your satin scarf mm-hmm. and you, like, feeling ostracized.
Yeah.
I think we could have this conversation forever, but we have to wrap it up. Obehi Janice is a Medford-based playwright and actor. Her play, Old White Sugar Daddy, will be performed in a free stage reading tonight as part of the Boston Project, a New Works initiative by the Speakeasy Stage Company. We'll have more information on that on our website, radioboston.com. Thank you so much, Obehi.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for listening to Radio Boston. It's a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tanya Mosley. This is Radio Boston.